Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 6, Adi Lila, chapter 16, The Pastimes of the Lord in His Childhood and Youth. So page 63. Now here the description of the five literary embellishments. There are two ornaments of sound and three ornaments of meaning. There is a sound ornament of alliteration in three lines, and in the combination of the words Shri and Lakshmi, there is the ornament of a tinge of redundancy. In the arrangement of the first line, the letter Ta occurs five times. In the arrangement third line repeats the letter Ra five times. In the fourth line, the letter Pa occurs four times. This arrangement of alliteration is a pleasing ornamental use of sounds. Although the words Shri and Lakshmi convey the same meaning and are therefore almost redundant, they are nevertheless not redundant. Describing Lakshmi as possessed of Shri opulence offers a difference in meaning with a tinge of repetition. This is the second ornamental use of words. But the use of the words Lakshmi or Eva, like Lakshmi, manifests the ornament of meaning called Upama, analogy. There is also the further ornament of meaning called Virodhabhasha, or a contradictory indication. Everyone knows that lotus flowers grow in the water of the Ganges, but to say that the Ganges takes birth from a lotus flower seems extremely contradictory. The existence of Mother Ganges begins from the lotus feet of the Lord. Although the statement that water comes from a lotus flower is a contradiction, in connection with the Lord Vishnu, it is a great wonder. In this birth of the Ganges by the inconceivable potency of the Lord, there is no contradiction, although it appears contradictory. Srila Prabhupada. The central point of all Vaishnava philosophy is to accept the inconceivable potency of Lord Vishnu. What sometimes appears contradictory from a material viewpoint is understandable in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he can perform contradictory activities by dint of his inconceivable potencies. Right, so you can see as what we're discussing in it, as establishing Krishna as the absolute truth, then that's the main principle that's there, is that the Lord has shaktis, and by his shaktis, these inconceivable shaktis, that anything he can accomplish. So even though it may appear contradictory, it still works because of the inconceivable potency. So it's very important that the Lord has potencies. Right? Because otherwise the general idea of the Supreme is just a nothingness. Like that. Somehow or another, that's considered the highest. Because if here you have form and all that, the highest must have no form. You know, so it's a very simplistic kind of approach. But the point is in reality, if here has form, there must have the original forms, the spiritual, eternal forms. Here has relationship, there must have the eternal relationships. Right? That's how it must work. Because if you're taking that something is being expanded, it must be based on the nature of the individual, you know, the person that it's coming from. Yeah. So, because they're a person, others are a person. They're conscious, everything else is conscious. Yeah. Right? He's independent, therefore everybody has their minute independence. But the difference is he's actually independent, everybody else is dependent. Yeah. So that point of the energies, that must be appreciated. Yeah. Otherwise, if not, then all these other strange philosophies come up simply because of this. That's why Prabhupada says the central point of all Vaishnava philosophy is the Lord has all opulences, right? So that's what's Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the central feature. Mm-hmm. 116, 82 to 89. Lord Chaitanya continued, Everyone knows that lotus flowers grow in the water, but water never grows from a lotus. All such contradictions, however, are wonderfully possible in Krishna. The great river Ganges has grown from his lotus feet. The real glory of Mother Ganges is that she has grown from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Such a hypothesis is another ornament called Anumana. I have simply discussed the five gross faults and five literary embellishments of this verse. But if we consider it in fine detail, we will find unlimited faults. You have achieved poetic imagination and ingenuity by the grace of your worshipable demigod. But poetry not well reviewed is certainly subject to criticism. Poetic skill used with due consideration is very pure, and with metaphors and analogies it is dazzling. After hearing the explanation of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the champion poet was struck with wonder. His cleverness stunned. He could not say anything. He wanted to say something, but no reply would come from his mouth. He then began to consider this puzzle within his mind. This mere boy has blocked my intelligence. I can therefore understand that Mother Saraswati has become angry with me. Srila Prabhupada. Because he's just thinking, how could a boy do this? Yes. He's not catching this boy as the Supreme Lord. And that, well, it's not that he's a boy, that somehow or another he's blocked. You know, Mother Saraswati's angry. He actually, Lord Chaitanya, understands all these things.
Yes.
You know, that. Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita, is clearly said that all intelligence comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart, as the Paramatma. The Paramatma gave the Pandit the intelligence to understand that because he was proud of his learning and wanted to defeat even the Supreme Lord, by the will of the Lord and through the agency of Mother Saraswati, he had been defeated. One should not, therefore, be too proud of one's position. Even if one is a greatly learned scholar, if he commits an offense to the lotus feet of the Lord, he will not be able to speak properly, in spite of his learning. In every respect, we are controlled. Our only duty, therefore, is to surrender always to the lotus feet of the Lord, and not be falsely proud. Mother Saraswati created this situation to favor the champion pandit so that he might surrender unto Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes, because that's one of the qualities of the devotees, that they have all these good qualities, but they're not proud of that. They're able to do things, but they're not proud. Why? Because it's just being done for the Lord. They don't see themselves as the doer. Even if they're taking part, the point is you're taking part simply as an instrument to affect the Lord's pleasure. So, since the Lord is pleased by the devotion, and you want to express the devotion, right? Then the point is you use these secondary elements, like in this case, then poetry. Right? The mechanics of the poetry, the grammar, the vocabulary, all these different things. But the difficulty comes up is if we become proud of our ability to use the secondary. Because then it's not about the Lord. Because if it's about the Lord, then you don't think of it separately. Right? So to become proud means you have to think of your secondary skills separate from the Lord. But otherwise, if they're seen in the context of the Lord, then it's just part of the same thing together. Is that so many things? Yeah. Keshava Kashmiri continued thinking. 1.16.90 through 102. The wonderful explanation the boy has given could not have been possible for a human being. Therefore, Mother Saraswati must have spoken personally through his mouth. Thinking thus, the pandit said, "My dear Nimai Pandit, please hear me. Hearing your explanation, I am simply struck with wonder. I am surprised. You are not a literary student and do not have long experience in studying the Shastras. How have you been able to explain all these critical points?" Hearing this and understanding the pandit's heart, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied in a humorous way, "My dear sir, I do not know what is good composition and what is bad, but whatever I have spoken must be understood to have been spoken by Mother Saraswati." Because he's thinking that that's what, how it works, right? So he's saying, yes, it must have been. When he heard this judgment from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the pandit sorrowfully wondered why Mother Saraswati wanted to defeat him through a small boy. I shall offer prayers and meditation to the goddess of learning, the champion concluded, and ask her why she has insulted me so greatly through this boy. Saraswati had in fact induced the champion to compose his verse in an impure way. Right? So Lord Chaitanya spoke on his own. Yeah. Furthermore, when it was discussed, she covered his intelligence, and thus the Lord's intelligence was triumphant. Otherwise, he could just keep arguing, right? You know, because you have that nature. If you have to win, you'll argue even if what you're saying is stupid, right? Yeah. When the poetic champion was thus defeated, all the Lord's disciples sitting there began to laugh loudly. The Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked them not to do so, and he addressed the poet as follows. You are the most learned scholar and the topmost of all great poets. For otherwise, how could such fine poetry come from your mouth? Your poetic skill is like the constant flow of the water of the Ganges. I find no one in the world who can compete with you, right? No one within the world, right? Those from the transcendental platform, that's another thing. Even in the poetic compositions of such great poets as Bhavabhuti, Jayadeva, and Kalidas, there are many examples of faults. Such mistakes should be considered negligible. One should see only how such poets have displayed their poetic power. Right? Because faults will always be, they can always find. So the point is being able to see what's the good about it. And that's what he's pointing out. Because the point is if it's done in connection with the Lord, it's perfect. Even if there are faults. But if it's done not in connection with the Lord, then it will always be faulty. Right? Though one appreciates the effort that they put into it, you know, the knowledge they have, the skill, the experience, all those things must be respected. Srila Prabhupada. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.11, it is said, in explaining the glories of the Lord, inexperienced men may compose poetry with many faults, but because it contains glorification of the Lord, great personalities read it, hear it, and chant it. Despite its minute literary discrepancies, one must study poetry on the merit of its subject matter. According to Vaishnava philosophy, any literature that glorifies the Lord, whether properly written or not, is first class. Because that's the point. It's connected to the Lord. That's what makes it first class. Then you might have, technically, it may be more developed. But the point is it's the devotion that's the most important thing. It's not the technique. We always try to use the best technique that of our ability. But it's not about that. You know, it's just a natural thing. You want to please Krishna, you try to give the best. But it's the devotion that pleases Krishna. Yes. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's it. Yeah. There need be no other considerations. The poetic compositions of Bhavabhuti or Sri Kanta include Malati Madhava, Uttara Charita, Veera Charita, and many similar Sanskrit dramas. This great poet was born during the time of Bhojaraj as the son of Nilakanta, a brahmana. Kalidas flourished during the time of Maharaj Vikramaditya. Oh, that far back. And he became the state poet. Oh, it was with Vikramaditya. He composed some 30 or 40 Sanskrit dramas, including Kumara Sambhava, Abhijnana Shakuntala. Oh, that's a comma. Okay. Kumara Sambhava, Abhijnana Shakuntala, and Meghadhuta. His drama, Raghuvamsa, is especially famous. We have already described Jayadeva in chapter 13 of the Adi Leela. 116, 103, 107. In other words, you appreciate how they've written and what they've done and all that. You don't sit around and try to find fault.
Yes.
Right? Because just being able to find fault, okay, that means you have some knowledge. But do you have knowledge of what's good? And what's the purpose? Right? Because just because there's a fault, are the people appreciate? Is it written nicely that it brings out the sentiments and everything and expresses what wanted to be expressed? And if that is there, that's the whole purpose of, in this case, a drama. Right? So the poetry, its purpose is fulfilled. But if we simply find fault and say, oh, this can't be any good, no one will like this, then what benefit has that analyzation, what is that giving to humanity? Right? Mm-hmm. As one may note, so many critical analyzations of things are written, then they are published by the particular university, you know, one copy, and stuck in their library, never to be seen again by anybody. Right. So that's the value of it. But people like, you know, we see here Kalidas and these others, Jayadeva, then they're still famous today. Kalidas, he says, during Vikramaditya, that means thousands of years ago. Right? And it's still popular. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
We say that it's always, I can say, a custom for devotees to write or to express themselves. To write poetry, to write books, to write...
Yes, the writing, but I'm saying it's a natural thing to some way glorify the Lord.
Yes.
So writing's a very standard thing, because then writing, it becomes established. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's written, therefore then people will remember. Mm-hmm. They can review it. While in previous ages, the first three ages, without writing, publishing meant you just spoke it, and then people would hear it once, and then they'd remember it. Yes. And so then that would be handed down, so then it would work. But in this age, generally writing is good.
Yes. It's also purifying for the person who's writing.
Yes, it's always personal, because you're absorbing yourself in material connected with the Lord.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, various name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. So that makes it special. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's the whole point, is that because you're associating with the Lord, and you're doing so for that benefit of associating and giving that association to others, then one gets so much benefit. Mm-hmm. If one's just writing to show off to how much of a scholar you are, then we should take, you know, hint from this pastime here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 116, 103-107. Lord Chaitanya continued, "I am not even fit to be your disciple. Therefore, kindly do not take seriously whatever childish impudence I have shown. Please go back home, and tomorrow we may meet again, so I may hear discourses on the Shastras from your mouth." In this way, both the poet and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went back to their homes, because he's taking the humble position, right? Because the humble position is what? It's on the social platform. They're not discussing philosophy, right? And so he is a mature, poet, like that. And Lord Chaitanya is, like you said, just a boy who's just opened the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so then socially, then there'll be a difference in standing there. So then these things are there. So the actual difference is the consideration of the devotion and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And seeing that Lord Chaitanya is the Lord himself, then one should consider he is the worshipable object everybody else should respect. But socially, he will follow the etiquette. So that's always there. So it's not that because you're white, right, now you can, be a white, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? You can't just now harass everybody, so that's the difficulty. Is that if I find fault, then that makes me right, so now I have I can have attitude and be in everybody's face. But that's not cultured.
Where's this coming from?
What? It comes from false ego.
This very common.
Yes, because of the false ego. So we see is that the material world basically is based on the false ego. And then as we come down, especially in Kali Yuga, there's more and more. You see in other ages, like Hiranyakashipu, he was, had a really solid false ego. But you see, it's not considered a good quality. You know, it's the demons will manifest that especially. So that's why the social etiquettes are there and all that, because people should be respected for whatever their position is. So even if you have a position like that, but someone else has a quality, that has to be respected for the quality that's there. It's not that because I have a position that means now everybody else's position doesn't count. Mm-hmm. No, you are respected for your position, they're respected for their position.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you don't try to, due to ego, try to push your position. You know, it's just a matter of the discussion. So there's that mutual respect based on what's there, be able to see the good qualities, see the positions that are there. That has to be always respected. So, so it's just false ego. So the more the living entity turns from the Lord and says, I'm the controller and the enjoyer, the more they're identifying with the material nature, the more that quality they have. Like here, if he identifies as a poet, that's all he has. Now, if his position as a poet is defeated, he doesn't have any identity. So naturally, just for, you know, security, then they will fight, whether it's correct or not. You know what I'm saying? So that's basically what one's dealing with in the social. So that's why one's respectful and deals nicely. Same time as you have to be, because here, he can't take advantage like that. You know, Mother Saraswati is his servant, and she will straighten him out. So also is that when we're dealing, you have to also deal appropriately for the audience you're dealing with. So if they have attitude, means you can respect them and that for their qualities and that, but you have to be very, very careful about projecting humility that they can take advantage of. Like that. Does that make sense? But if by showing humility that will bring their ego down, then that would be the natural position. You know what I'm saying? But you have to see is that, you know, if you're working within the social context. If you're working outside the social context, like Jarabharat, you know, who cares? Because it doesn't matter. You know, Sukadev Goswami, see, all they just don't care. Because it doesn't matter. You know. But if you're working in a thing where you have to consider the social, then you have to act in such a way that you'll deal properly in all these things, but at the same time as not let them take advantage. Does that make sense? So you're respecting them, you have to balance this, not too much that they become puffed up, not enough that they become upset. You can't be too humble that they'll take advantage of that. So it's that's why the social things are considered a bit of a trick. Yes. Yeah. In this way, both the poet and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went back to their homes. And at night, the poet worshipped Mother Saraswati. In a dream, the goddess informed him of the Lord's position. And the poetic champion could understand that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. The next morning, the poet came to Lord Chaitanya and surrendered on this lotus feet. Because Lord Chaitanya says, yeah, you come tomorrow and we can discuss. Like that, yeah. The Lord bestowed his mercy upon him and cut off all his bondage to material attachment. Right? So that's mercy. Because if one loses attachment to material attachment, and then one can attach oneself to Krishna, that's real mercy. Right? And then whatever you have, you engage in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? So much of the time we're by conditioning, we work in certain areas, have certain facilities, and use them because of attachment. Mm-hmm. Right? But now, the point is if they're of value to use in Krishna's service, and they're within the context of your duties, they can be used in Krishna's service without attachment to them.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, it's just like, let's say you're cooking. You can cook nicely for Krishna without being attached to cooking and eating.
Yes.
Right, you have that ability, you can do that, you're comfortable with that, so then you can cook nicely for Krishna. You don't have to be attached that you're going to get something nice to eat, and that's why you put in all that fine endeavor, or people are going to praise you, or like this and that. So in the same way, that goes for everything that we have. So, if they are of value in use in Krishna consciousness, right, they're part of duties, they're part of recommendations, then by engaging them in Krishna's service, Then that will be what we'll use. That's what we'll do, mm-hmm. Right? But so we don't have to be attached to be able to engage them, mm-hmm. Right? Much of the time we're engaged in things in the material world because of attachment,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the person is working hard, getting good grades. Why? Because they want to get into a good school, because they want to get a particular degree, so they can get a particular job, they get a particular amount of money, the appropriate number of zeros, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So that's why they're working. Otherwise, if they're thinking it doesn't matter, then they don't even bother. So the devotee is different. That's the unique thing, is that they can endeavor because it's pleasing to Krishna. So without material attachment, now they can use their facilities in Krishna's service, you know, with devotion. Does that make sense? The mixed aspect goes away. And if you find that there's something that is not so important, not recommended and all that, and if you lose attachment, then you don't have to work with it. You only worked with it before because of the attachment, so you tried to dovetail it. But if it's not something recommended or something important, then it can just be dropped because there's no attachment. sense. But things that are of use, then that's what's used. That's what's engaged. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada. The same process advocated by Lord Sri Krishna in his teachings of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, surrender unto me in all instances, was advocated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The champion surrendered unto the Lord, and the Lord favored him. One who is favored by the Lord is free from material bondage, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Chaktva Deham Punar Janma Naiti Mam Eti Sorjuna. 116.108. The poetic champion was certainly most fortunate. His life was successful by dint of his vast learning and erudite scholarship, and thus he attained the shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's always interesting that verse 108 in every chapter is always something significant. It's not just a verse that you're going along. It's always some kind of like a conclusion. Srila Prabhupada. Sri Narottam Das Thakur has sung that the best qualification for taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya is to be the most fallen, because the Lord came specifically to deliver the fallen souls. In this age, there are very few scholars. Almost everyone is a fallen meat-eater, drunkard, woman-hunter, or gambler. Such persons are never considered learned scholars, even if they pose as such, right? Because if someone is a scholar, but they have these kind of qualities, no one will really consider them too seriously. Right? Mechanically, yes, they may get the award, everyone will sit there and clap their hands, but no one considers them personally actually as a scholar. Right? Because these so-called scholars superficially see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu associates with the fallen souls, they think that he is meant for a lower class of men, but that they do not need him. Thus, such scholars do not take to the Krishna consciousness movement. To be puffed up with false learning, therefore, is a disqualification for accepting the Krishna consciousness movement. But here is a special example. For although the poetic champion was a greatly learned scholar, the Lord also favored him because of his humble submission. Right? So that mood, that humble submission, that's what then impresses the Lord. And then by that, the Lord Chaitanya, he favors. So we can see is that the humble submission is the main thing. So generally those who are fallen in that, it's obvious that they're fallen, so they can tend to be humble. But if someone is qualified on the material platform, they can be proud. And because of that, they tend to not surrender. You know? Does that make sense? So occasionally you might see someone that is in a good material position, right, due to piety, and somehow or another there's enough piety that they can appreciate, they can have that humble attitude. And then by the Lord's grace they can surrender and they can take up the process. So everybody can do. So that's why it says this here. We see is that here's a special example. But the general tendency is that the materialist, he becomes proud of his position, and because of that he can't surrender. Right? So that, yes.
But Maharaj, it seems that here for Keshava Kashmiri he was accepted Sarasvati as his spiritual master.
Basically. I'm sure he has this specific, but otherwise, yes, he's always worshipping her and interacting, and he's favored by her. That's why he was, that's why up to this point he is the Digvijay.
Yes.
But then coming to Navadvipa, because you have the logicians and that everywhere, they've all studied in Varanasi, but Varanasi had Navanyaya. So they're supposed to, another category, and so if you can defeat them, then that's like they're the topmost, like that. Officially, kind of formally, it's Varanasi, but actually, technically, by skill, it's Navadvipa.
Yes. So these two places are the most important places of learning.
Basically, yeah. Okay. Some have been established, but you just see is that's always these are the places. Since Lord Chaitanya, then we see Navadvipa. Means it's there, it's just that sometimes it's manifest, sometimes it's not. Varanasi is always there because Varanasi is the place for, the impersonalists and all that. So it's just, that's always the way it's been. So you see, is that they mentioned, they're from Varanasi, Rupa Goswami say they're from Varanasi. That's all he has to say. And then they're puffed up with their knowledge and like that. Because Varanasi is known as, I think it's renowned for being the oldest city on the planet that's been constantly lived at. There may be, they may have found really old cities, but you know, no one's been living there for hundreds or thousands of years. The Varanasi goes back thousands of years, and people have been living there the whole time.
Same place.
Yeah. So that's the
same people.
Sorry.
Same people, maybe.
You probably same people keep coming back and all that, just changing positions, you know, like that. Yeah. You're puffed up, so you become the Dobi, and then the next life you become the Pandit, and then the next life you become the Dobi, you know, like that, yeah. You know, sometimes the dog, you know, sometimes the, you know, so, you know, like that. But, yeah, yeah, but they just, but they, you know, Varanasi is their spot, yeah. Yeah. Verses 116-111. Vrindavan Das Thakur has described all these incidents elaborately. I have only presented the specific incidents he has not described. Right, so there's more detail of that. So you see where he just kind of very simply, so maybe Vrindavan Das may have described more his interaction with Saraswati or other things like that. But this part, then, was he didn't give so much detail than that he's discussed. The nectarine drops of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes can satisfy the senses of everyone who hears them. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. In his chapter summary of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adi Khanda, chapters 11 through 15, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes,
That's his commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat.
Hmm?
Chaitanya Bhagavat wrote commentaries both on Bhagavat,
Chaitanya Bhagavat
and Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yes.
Anubhashya.
Anubhashya.
The one on Chaitanya Bhagavat
is
something else? That's something different?
This is a different commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat?
This is
Chaitanya Bhagavat commentary.
Chaitanya Charitamrita is
Anubhashya. And this one?
Is his commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat. I mean, it's still called an Anubhashya because it's a commentary, but...
His Anubhashya just means the general is that you're commenting on something. It's not the main. You know, you're giving something, you know, supporting. Because I think they're taking Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his would be the main, you know, commentary, and then they're just making their points. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati writes, Sri Gaurachandra, the husband of Saraswati, wandered throughout Navadvip with thousands of students while remaining intoxicated from scholastic mellows. Throughout Navadvip, no one other than Gangadas Pandit could properly understand Nimai Pandit's explanations. Right? They were so technical and so fine, except for Gangadas Pandit, no one else could understand them. And Gangadas Pandit is understanding them, of course, by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Right? According to their mundane mentality, the materialists saw Nimai Pandit in various ways. The atheists saw him as Yamaraj personified, right? Because he'd come and destroy them, right? You know. The materialists saw him as Cupid personified. And the learned scholars saw him as Brihaspati personified. Meanwhile, the Vaishnavas eagerly waited with the following hope. Quote, when will the Lord manifest devotional service to Vishnu within this world, which is devoid of devotion to Vishnu? End quote. Many people came to study at Navadvip. Didn't see you in the morning. Couldn't relate to being cold and the sun was out or something. Okay, yeah. Yeah. It should be raining or something. Yeah. Then it's worth coming. Yeah.
That's the only way I'm happy.
Okay, yeah. Cold, wet, yeah. Got it.
Special devotee.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that struck me when I came to India. It was wet when it was warm. And when it was cold, it was dry.
Yes.
You know, because generally in the West, it's the other way around.
Yes.
You know,
like, so, depends which West you're talking about.
Yes. So I'm talking about once you get to the point where there's no coconut trees growing and stuff.
Very much West.
Yes. So
maybe he brought the weather.
Hmm?
Maybe he brought this.
maybe. Like that. He couldn't bring the rain, so that's good. That's good.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Sun's still out.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Let it be like that.
I'm renounced.
Okay. You're willing to be detached.
Yeah, I made sacrifices.
I'm like, okay, good, good. Many people came to study in Navadvip, which was the main educational center. Many Vaishnava residents of Chattagram came and lived in Navadvip in order to study and reside on the bank of the Ganges. In the afternoon, all the pure devotees would gather at the assembly of Sri Advaita. All the Vaishnavas in the assembly of Advaita felt great happiness in their hearts on hearing the glories of Lord Hari chanted by Mukunda, who is dear to all the Vaishnavas. For this reason, the Lord was also very pleased at heart with Mukunda. As soon as Nimai saw Mukunda, he would challenge him with questions and logic, and both would then engage in loving debate. Nimai would also challenge other devotees headed by Srivas. Fearing that Nimai would challenge them, they would all run away from him. Having renounced topics not related to Krishna, the devotees did not love to hear anything except Krishna Katha, and Nimai did not ask them anything other than questions on logic, right? You know, so so they wanted to go and then hear about the Lord's glories with Advaitacharya. You know, so that's what he's saying. When will the Lord, manifest the devotional service? Because now he's manifesting, he's tasting the pastime of logic.
Yes.
So then when will the element of manifesting the other? Because, see, as if you've come from this kind of, the one aspect is he's come from this background, then they can't say it's just a sentimental thing. You'll say he's the most intelligent, he's the most logical, he's the most like this, and then he has chosen devotional service, so then it will be respected. So, yeah. Because otherwise, you see the sannyasis of Varanasi, then they're only seeing the sentimental side. They don't understand. But once they hear him speak, then they understand that he's the only the Supreme Lord could speak like that. One day, Nimai Pandit was coming on the main road with some students. At that time, Mukunda saw Nimai from a distance and immediately tried to escape from his vision. On the pretext of describing the reason for Mukunda's behavior, Nimai narrated his and his devotees' glories to Govinda, who was his servant and doorkeeper, saying, "I have not yet revealed the topics of devotional service to Krishna. That is why Mukunda ran away from me. But he will not do this for long, because I will manifest such pure devotional service and Vaishnava characteristics that even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva will come to my doorstep and roll on the ground." Thereafter, the author describes the godless atmosphere of Navadvip at the time. Although the devotees were always engaged in chanting the names of Krishna, the people of Nadia were so averse to Krishna and maddened by enjoyable objects like wealth and children, that as soon as they heard the chanting of Krishna's names by devotees, particularly the four brothers headed by Srivas, they ridiculed and teased them. Right, so this idea is that, oh no, but it's Kali Yuga, it's so bad, we can't go out, we can't preach and all that. Navadvip is way worse than anything we're experiencing. Right, so unless they're chasing you down the street with sticks and all that, then you're doing fine. Like that.
In the West, it happened.
It does happen, but how many can say that's happened to them?
Yes.
Like that. Indradunamars can say, because he goes everywhere. But for most people, it's not happening much.
I know a guy, a devotee, who used to be the one throwing the stones.
Yes, yes. And now he's the
devotee. He's the devotee.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, it's like that. That's the thing, is Lord Chaitanya's mission catches everybody. You know, that's the meaning of papi tapi jato chilo. You know, hari nama udurilo. He'll pick, the Lord, holy name will pick them all up. Because he probably chanted Hare Krishna a lot.
I mean, he heard it a lot.
That, but also, yeah, these Hare Krishna like that. So he was criticized, but he was constantly chanting.
Yeah. But, and of course, his life is miserable, so there comes that moment of clarity where it's like, maybe they're onto something.
Yeah, because they're happy.
Yeah, exactly. Suddenly.
Right? I'm throwing the rocks. I'm not happy. You're throwing rocks at them. They're still happy. There's something.
Something's going on.
Up. Yeah. What's going on here? Hearing the blasphemous words from the sinful atheists, the Vaishnavas felt great distress within their hearts and always thought, when will Sri Krishna Chandra appear within this world and eradicate the dearth of kirtan? When the Vaishnavas informed Sri Advaita about the criticism and blasphemous words of the atheists, Acharya Prabhu vowed, I will soon induce Krishna, who gives pleasure to the hearts of the devotees, to manifest here in Navadvip. By the words of Sri Advaita, the distress of the Vaishnavas was mitigated. Meanwhile, as Nimai increased Sachi's joy by remaining absorbed in the pleasure of study, Sri Ishwara Puri one day arrived incognito at Sri Advaita's house in Navadvip. By seeing his wonderful effulgence, Dvaitacharya understood that Ishwara Puri was a Vaishnava sannyasi. When Mukunda sang a song about Krishna at Advaita's assembly, the naturally deep ocean of love for Krishna and the pure heart of Ishwara Puri overflowed. Thereupon, everyone came to know that this devoted sannyasi was Ishwara Puri, even though he came incognito so they wouldn't know. One day, as Sri Gaurasundar was returning home from teaching, by providence he met Ishwara Puri on the way. The Lord, who is Jagat Guru, displayed honor to his devotees by immediately offering obeisances to his servant. Seeing Nimai's wonderful effulgence, Ishwara Puri inquired about his identity and the subject of his studies. Nimai answered all of Ishwara Puri's inquiries and then respectfully brought him home for lunch. After Sachi Devi cooked and offered foodstuffs to Krishna and fed Ishwara Puri, Ishwara Puri began to discuss topics of Krishna with Nimai. While discussing Krishna Katha, Ishwara Puri became overwhelmed with love of God. Ishwara Puri stayed in Navadvip at the house of Sri Gopinath Acharya for a few months, and Nimai regularly went to see him. Seeing the devotion of Gadadhar Pandit, who was renounced from his childhood, Ishwara Puri began to affectionately teach him his book, Sri Krishna Lilamrita. Every evening after studying and teaching, Nimai went to offer obeisances to Ishwara Puri. One day, Ishwara Puri requested Nimai Pandit to point out the mistakes in his Sri Krishna Lilamrita and indicated his desire to correct the mistakes under Nimai's guidance. Hearing his words, the Lord condemned mundane scholarship and spoke the following invaluable nectaring words. Quote, first of all, this book is composed by such a pure devotee as Puripada, and moreover, it is full of topics about Krishna. Therefore, whoever finds fault in this book is certainly an offender. The poetry of a pure devotee, in whatever form it may be, is always pleasing to Krishna. There is no doubt about it. The Supreme Lord never sees any grammatical faults in the statements of his devotees, for he is controlled by devotion and he accepts the sentiments of his devotees. A person who finds fault in the statements of a devotee is himself full of faults. No one is so audacious as to find faults in the descriptions of the Supreme Lord by a pure devotee like Puripada. Right, so that's why the acharyas give their comments, this and that. We don't find faults. Don't try to compare them. And this one says this, that one says that, and there's a contradiction. We don't do that. That's not how you say.
Kosher.
Yeah, it's not kosher. That's good. I was going to say fair dinkum, but kosher is better. Okay. The Supreme Lord never sees any grammatical faults in the statements of his devotee. Okay. No one is so audacious as to find faults in the description of the Supreme Lord by a pure devotee like Puripada. But Ishwara Puri repeatedly requests Nimai to point out the faults in his book. In this way, Ishwara Puri regularly spent an hour or two with Nimai discussing various subjects. After hearing a verse from Ishwara Puri's book, one day Nimai Pandit Sportling said, the verb in this verse should be Paras mai padi instead of Atmane padi. Another day, when Nimai came back, Ishwara Puri said, the verb that you have not accepted as Atmane padi, I have accepted as Atmane padi. In order to increase the glories and display the victory of his servant, the Lord did not point out any further faults. In this way, after spending some time enjoying educational pastimes with Nimai, Ishwar Puri left Navadvip to continue sanctifying the holy places of India. Among the best of teachers, learned scholars, and Bhattacharyas of Navadvip, none could stand before or defeat Nimai in debate. In the company of his disciples, Nimai wandered the streets of Navadvip like an independent lord. One day, by providence, Nimai met Mukunda on the path and asked him why he stayed away from him. And then Nimai also told Mukunda that if he could not answer his question, he would not leave him alone. Knowing that Nimai had knowledge of only grammar, Mukunda resolved to silence him by asking him questions on Alankara. Nimai, however, pointed out various Alankaric faults while totally breaking Mukunda's poetic talent to pieces. Seeing Nimai's unlimited knowledge, Mukunda was astonished and resolved, "If such an intelligent person became a devotee of Krishna, I would never leave his association." On another day, when Nimai met Garadhar Pandit, he asked him the symptoms of liberation. When Garadhar told the Lord the symptoms of liberation according to the conclusions of the Nyaya Shastras, the Lord pointed out various faults. When Garadhar Pandit said mitigation of excessive misery is the symptom of liberation, Mahaprabhu, the master of Saraswati, refuted it. Every afternoon, Nimai discussed the Shastras with students on the bank of the Ganges. Although the Vaishnavas were greatly pleased to hear the Lord's wonderful explanations of the scriptures, they thought that if such a learned person as Nimai became a devotee of Krishna, then everything would be successful. The devotees prayed in this way: "Let Nimai have attachment for Krishna." Out of love, some blessed him, saying, "Let Nimai attain devotion to Krishna." Whenever Nimai saw the devotees headed by Srivas, he manifested the pastimes of offering obeisances. Thus, demonstrating by his own behavior that devotional service to Krishna is awakened only by the blessings of devotees. According to their respective mentality and qualifications, various people saw the Lord in various ways. Even the Yavanas were attracted to the Lord when they saw him. Nimai taught his students grammar in the Chandi Mandap Hall within the courtyard of the fortunate Mukunda Sanjaya of Navadvip. One day, right, because the Chandi Hall is that you have the big houses in the courtyard they have. And in the courtyard, that it's you know, a big courtyard that's open, and at one end, and they'll always have a raised platform, which will be the Mandap. Right, so generally that's the Chandi Mandir. They, you know, they do all the pujas there, the Durga Puja, the Kali Puja, you know, like this. And so then he would sit there, and then he would give his classes, because it's a big place, so many many people can come and sit there. And these old houses you see like this, like that.
It's open space.
Yeah. Many times it'd be like this big, the courtyard. Yeah, most of the time it'll be no roof. Some of them have covered, some have roofs, but. But they generally, it'll be down and then it'll go up, right? And then there'll be a veranda around. And so then at the one end, the veranda, it'll be generally bigger. And that will be the mandap there. Okay. You know, so then he would sit there in that whole area, then it would be used for his classes. Okay. You know, so a lot of people could sit. One day, the Lord manifested transformations of ecstatic love on the pretext of a disorder of winds. Being illusioned by Yoga Maya, the Lord's friends and relatives, who have natural affection for him, applied various medicinal oils on the Lord's head. Sometimes the Lord, who always enjoys pastimes, proudly and loudly disclosed the truth about himself. When by his own sweet will, the Lord manifested a return to his normal state, everyone there happily chanted the names of Hari. At that time, the residents of Nadia, whose only life and soul was Sri Gaura, joyfully distributed clothes and other items to the poor and distressed. After sporting in the waters of the Ganges with his students at noontime, the Lord would return home, worship Lord Krishna, offer water to Tulsi, circumambulate her, and then accept foodstuffs given by Lakshmi Priya. After glancing towards Yoga Nidra from some time, okay, he would again leave for teaching. On his way, he would talk and joke with the residents of Navadvip. One day, on reaching the house of a weaver, Nimai asked for some cloth and accepted what was given without payment. Another day, Nimai went to the house of some cowherd men and asked for some yogurt and milk. Addressing the lords as mama or uncle, the cowherd men joked with him in various ways and gave him plenty of yogurt and milk free of charge. The Lord also revealed the truth about his own identity on the pretext of joking with them. One day the Lord accepted various divine perfumes from the perfume merchants. One day he accepted a garland of various flowers from the florists. And one day he accepted betel nuts and similar spices from the pawn merchant. In this way the Lord pleased them by accepting their free gifts. Being overwhelmed on seeing the matchless beauty of the Lord, everyone offered him various free items. On another day, when he arrived at the house of a conch merchant, the conch merchant gave Gornarayan a conch and offered his obeisances. He did not ask any payment in exchange. One day, the Lord went to the house of an astrologer and asked about the details of his previous birth. As soon as the astrologer began to chant the Gopal mantra in order to calculate the Lord's horoscope, he immediately saw various pastimes of Krishna and wonderful forms of the Lord in his meditation. While seeing these wonderful forms, the astrologer opened his eyes and saw Gaurahari before him, and then again entered into his meditation. But by the influence of the Lord's internal potency, he could not recognize the Lord. Struck with wonder, he thought, perhaps a demigod or someone expert in mantras has come here in the guise of a brahmana to test me. One day the Lord went to the house of Sridhar and asked him, though you are serving the husband of Lakshmi, why are you bereft of food and clothes? And why is your house old and broken? Why are ordinary people who worship Durga and Vishahari so materially prosperous? In reply, Sridhar said, a king living in a palace and eating palatable foodstuffs, and a bird living in its nest in a tree and eating whatever it finds in various places, both pass their time in the same way. There's no difference in their enjoyment of happiness, because everyone enjoys their respective fruits of karma. Right? So he's pointing out that it doesn't matter what you have, to you, that's your thing and that will be give you pleasure. And the amount of pleasure you're getting is no more than someone else is getting.
Yes.
You know, in their environment, in their situation.
Yes.
In this way, on the pretext of joking, the Lord disclosed the glories of a devotee and daily obtained banana shoots, bananas, and banana flowers free of charge from Sridhar. The Lord revealed the truth of his own identity while disclosing the glories of Sridhar. He indicated that he belonged to a family of cowherds and that he was the controller of the Ganges and other energies. Then as the Lord returned home from the house of Sridhar, his students also returned to their homes after the completion of their studies.
So as a Brahman, then he could take all the everything for free.
Yes.
If he was a Kshatriya,
No, but they wouldn't. But as a Brahman like that, but the point is because he's the Lord, yes. Then they're actually giving to the Lord. One is they're giving just that they like him so much. So being a Brahman and all that, so they get all this benefit. So that's okay. One day when the Lord saw the full moon in the sky, he became absorbed in the mood of Sri Vrindavana Chandra, and in that mood he began to play wonderfully on a flute. No one other than Satyadevi could hear the sound of that flute. After hearing that sweet sound, Satyadevi came out of the room and saw Nimai sitting at the door of the Vishnu temple. As Satyadevi approached, she could no longer hear the sound of the flute, but saw the moon directly manifest on her son's chest. In this way, Satyadevi regularly saw unlimited opulences of Lord Gaura. One day when Srivas Pandit met the Lord on the path, so he's playing the flute, but it's not that everybody can hear because he's not revealing himself. One day when Srivas Pandit met the Lord on the pathway, he asked him, Nimai, why are you wasting time by not engaging your mind in the worship of Krishna? What will you gain by studying and teaching day and night? People study only for the purpose of understanding devotional service to Krishna. If that is not achieved, then what is the benefit of such useless education? Therefore, do not waste any more time. You have studied enough. Now, without wasting another moment, begin worshipping Krishna. Hearing these words from the mouth of his devotee, the Lord says, O Pandit, you are a devotee. By your mercy, I will certainly be able to worship Krishna. When Nimai Pandit was residing in Navadvip as the crest jewel of all teachers, a great Digvijay Pandit, who had received a benediction from Saraswati, arrived there. The Digvijay had already defeated in argument the learned scholars of all provinces, and after hearing that the scholars of Navadvip were famous for their learning throughout India, he proudly arrived in Navadvip in order to defeat the scholars there. Hearing about the arrival of the Digvijay Pandit, the entire scholarly community of Navadvip became most restless and worried. When the students of Nimai Pandit gave him the news, he told them, "The Supreme Lord and destroyer of everyone's pride always destroys the pride of arrogant persons. Trees with fruits and persons with good qualities are always humble. Because great Digvijay kings like Haihaya, Nahusha, Vena, Bana, Naraka, and Ravana were excessively intoxicated with pride, the Lord immediately destroyed their pride." So all of these, they were all proud something because of their, you know, their abilities and their whatever accomplishments were there. And because of that, then the Lord reduced their pride. "Therefore, the Lord will soon destroy the pride of this Digvijayi who has come to Navadvip." After speaking in this way, the Lord saw on the bank of the Ganges that evening, sat on the bank of the Ganges that evening and began to contemplate how to conquer this Digvijayi. And at that time, as the full moon shone in the sky, the Digvijayi arrived before the Lord and was informed by the students about the identity of the wonderfully effulgent Nimai Pandit. The Lord first exchanged a few words with the Digvijayi, and then respectfully and tactfully presented to him, requested him to describe the glories of the Ganges. Thereupon, the Digvijayi began to quickly and incessantly compose and recite verses in glorification of Ganga Devi, like the rumbling of hundreds of clouds. Everyone there was struck with wonder on seeing the amazing poetic ability of the great Digvijayi. When the Digvijayi stopped after incessantly reciting verses for 3 hours, the Lord requested him to explain the verses. As soon as Digvijayi began to explain, the Lord pointed out innumerable faults in Alankar and other literary rules in the beginning, middle, and end of his description. The Digvijayi could not reply to any of the Lord's challenges. All his ingenuity became overshadowed. When on seeing this, the Lord's students were about to laugh, the Lord checked them and solaced the Digvijayi in various ways. He told the Digvijayi to go home, take rest, and after studying further, return the next day. Being extremely embarrassed and saddened within, the Digvijayi began to think, I have defeated even the extraordinary scholars of the 6 branches of philosophy. But due to providence, I have finally been defeated by a young ordinary grammar teacher. How is it possible? It must be that I have committed some offense at the feet of Saraswati Devi. Thinking in this way, he began to chant the Saraswati mantra and soon fell asleep. Is that true? Thinking in this way, he began to chant the Saraswati mantra and soon fell asleep. That very night, Saraswati appeared before Digvijayi Pandit and disclosed to him the real identity of Nimai Pandit. She said, "Nimai Pandit is not an ordinary worldly scholar. He is the omnipotent and original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Saraswati Devi is only a shadow of his internal potency. Thus, this Saraswati, who is the shadow of the internal potency of the Lord, is ashamed to stand before Narayana. Therefore, she remains in the background." Devi further, like, because otherwise, like this pandit, you're gaining so much knowledge and all that by the grace of the goddess of learning, but it happens to be just on that mundane platform. So that's just like Maya, she stays in the background. She's a potency of the Lord. She's serving the Lord, but she tends to stay in the background. Right? So you Divya Saraswati, she's directly serving, but here, like this. So that's what he said, the shadow of the internal potency. Mm-hmm. So you have the Divya Saraswati, so her shadow will be Saraswati here. Mm-hmm. Devi further told the Digvijayi Pandit that he had now actually achieved the fruit of his worship, because he had the good fortune of seeing the Lord of innumerable universes. Then, after instructing the Digvijayi to quickly go to the Lord and surrender at his lotus feet, she disappeared. When the Digvijayi woke from his sleep, he immediately went to the Lord and informed him with faltering words of the details of his dream and instructions of Saraswati Devi. The Lord, who is the master of Saraswati, also instructed Digvijayi about the superiority of spiritual knowledge, which is favorable for worshipping the Supreme Lord, and the abomination of material knowledge, which is the source of false pride and domination. Right? Because that's it, is the more knowledge you have, then people use it for false pride and domination. Right? You know, you see is that, you know, even in the recent histories, you have anybody develop some knowledge and skills in that, and they become very powerful as a country or as a nation. Then they go out to ones that are less developed in knowledge and that, and due to pride, think that they're similar, and then they dominate, and then, you know, like that, and take everything away. Yes. So we see is that's why he's saying it's an abomination, because unless the knowledge is accompanied by good qualities and humility, then it's not actual real knowledge. It's just another way of expressing control and enjoyment. The Lord said, the fruit of cultivating knowledge is to fix the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna, and devotion to Vishnu, or spiritual knowledge, is the only truth and desirable object. End quote. After speaking these words of instruction, the Lord particularly forbade Digvijaya from revealing to anyone the truths he had heard from Saraswati, right? Because otherwise he'd tell everyone. So he says, no, you can't. Right? Because he's taking the mood of a devotee, so he doesn't want that to be the main thing. Okay. The Lord particularly forbade Digvijayi from revealing to anyone the truths that he had heard from Saraswati, which are confidential to even the Vedas. By the mercy of the Lord, devotion, detachment, and spiritual knowledge simultaneously manifest in the body of Digvijay Pandit. And, being fully satisfied by achieving pure devotional service, he became Trinada P. Sunicha, more humble than a straw in the street. So now, taking up the devotion, now he becomes humble. So that would mean how knowledgeable he was, then naturally how humble he would be. While describing the nature of Gaura's mercy, the author has written, even a most proud person becomes extremely humble by the mercy of Gaura. Even persons who are intoxicated with pride due to material wealth give up royal happiness to live in the forest to worship Hari. If the most alluring objects desired by materialistic persons are abundantly available to persons who have received the mercy of the Lord, they can easily abandon them. What to speak of royal happiness? The devotees of Krishna consider even the happiness of liberation as insignificant. Right? Because you're getting rid of all the miseries of the material world. And, you know, everybody would like to do that. But the devotees consider that insignificant, because the happiness of serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna is way greater than whatever happiness is there in simply removing the pains of material existence. So that's very important. For the devotees, liberation literally is not important. Because it's the absorption in Krishna that makes everything perfect. When the scholars of Navadvipa saw the wonderful prowess of Nimai Pandit and his victory over the Digvijayi in this way, they desired to confer on him the title of Bhadi Shimha, and thus his matchless glories were declared. Bhadi Shimha, so that'd be the great lion, huh?
Vadi Shimha.
Oh, Vadi Shimha.
They spell Va as Ba.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Vadi means the one who can debate.
Devadi, so he's a lion in debate. Vadi Shimha. Okay. Oh, just like Vadi Raj. Okay, same kind of thing. And thus his matchless glories were declared. Nimai Pandit was greatly honored by the wealthy people of Navadvipa, as well as by all those who were accustomed to performing religious rituals. In order to establish an ideal example of the principles of household life, The Lord did not encourage the fault of miserliness. Rather, he showed compassion towards needy and distressed persons. Because miserliness is a fault. And so then it's always that, you know, as a householder, then he would always, whatever he is have, he would, you know, share, distribute to those who are needy and distressed. Guests were always properly served at the Lord's house in Sri Mayapur Navadvip. Though the Lord, who is the teacher of people in general, personally displayed the pastimes of a poor householder, he nevertheless constantly endeavored to serve renounced Vaishnav sannyasis. Right? So even though he was a simple Brahmin and not having much facility, he would always serve the Vaishnav sannyasis. Like that. Like you see, like Srila Prabhupada's father, he'd always invite four sadhus over every day for lunch. Like that. Yeah. As soon as Mother Sachi noticed the shortage of ingredients required for feeding the sannyasis, Gaurasundar would immediately bring from somewhere the necessary ingredients for the service of the Vaishnavas. Lakshmi Devi engaged in cooking for the service of the Vaishnavas, and the Lord personally sat with the Vaishnav sannyasis and fully satisfied them by feeding them sumptuously. It means, in other words, he would serve.
Yes.
Right? So then his wife and mother, they would, you know, be cooking things, bringing things and all that, but he would personally put it on their plates.
Yes.
The principal duty of householders is to serve guests. Those householders do not serve guests are lower than animals and birds. Even if a householder is bereft, because an animal or a bird, they may not serve, but they're animals.
Yes.
So if you're not serving, though you have the capacity to serve, and you don't, that's lower than the animal. Like, animals are supposed to be animals. That's animals do animal stuff. You know, yeah. Fair enough. No? Okay. Yeah. Even if a household is bereft of wealth due to past karma, he should, without duplicity, serve his guests at least some water, a sitting place, and sweet words. Knowing that Sri Lakshmi Narayan had appeared in Navadvip, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Sukadev, Vyasadev, and Narada visited the Lord's house at Sri Mayapur in the guise of sannyasis. Right? Because he's born Narayan in this pastime. Right? Because he's living with Lakshmi. And you know, so then he's performing the pastime. So you see, then you have that formality and all these other things like that. So, you know, so that's that attitude. So, yeah. From early morning, Sri Lakshmi Devi continually engaged in various services in the temple room, arranged the paraphernalia for worshipping the Lord, and served Tulsi. She gave more attention to the service of Sachi Devi, her mother-in-law and mother of the Lord, than to the service of Tulsi. Sachi Devi sometimes saw blazing flames of fire under the feet of her son, and she sometimes smelled the fragrance of lotus flowers throughout her house. After some time, Nimai Pandit went with his students to earn some wealth in Bangladesh, where he stayed on the banks of the Padmavati River. Overwhelmed by the Lord's ingenious scholarship, innumerable students came to study from him, and within a short time mastered various subjects. At this point, the author says that simply because the Lord went to Bangladesh, the young, the old, and the women there are even today intoxicated in Sri Chaitanya's Samkirtan movement.
Yes.
Right? So you see, Bangladesh is very much,
yes,
you know, absorbed in this, like that. And so he's saying that this is because, the author points out, that this is because Lord Chaitanya went there. But sometimes, in order to fill their stomachs, some atheists declare themselves to be Narayan, or the Supreme Lord. And they thus ruin the people of that country. Right? Because you have all these incarnations come up, and then they mess it up, because they're all nicely worshipping Lord Chaitanya and Krishna. In Radhadesh, also, there is a great Brahmadaitya, who externally dressed as a Brahmana, but who internally had the nature of a demon, and declared himself to be Gopal. Because right? Brahmadaitya means a Brahma Rakshasa. Right? Due to his cowardliness, however, people called him a hated jackal. There are no greater offenders than those sinful living entities who want to declare themselves or other living entities to be the Supreme Lord, instead of declaring Sri Chaitanya, the Lord of innumerable universes, as the Supreme Lord. Moreover, even today it is found that simply by remembering the servants of Chaitanya Chandra, a living entity attains all auspiciousness. Mm-hmm. Right? So, let alone the Lord remembering his devotees, one attains all auspiciousness. When the Lord was residing in Bangladesh, Sri Lakshmi Devi, being unable to tolerate separation from the Lord, left this world from the bank of the Ganges for meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord. When the people of Bangladesh heard that the Lord was returning to Navadvip, they brought various gifts for him. At that time, one pious Brahmin resident of Bangladesh named Tapan Mishra, who was unable to ascertain the goal of life and the process to achieve it, received instructions late one night in a dream to approach Nar Narayan in the form of Nimai Pandit, who appeared in the age of Kali to deliver the fallen souls. When Tapan Mishra arrived before the Lord, Sri Gaurasundara instructed him that the only religious process for the age of Kali was Sri Krishna Nam Sankirtana, which awards all perfection and which is to be followed by all people of all countries at all times. Right, so it's a universal declaration of the Lord. So this artificial to try to say, oh, this is only for those from India and this and that. Since the whole world belongs to Lord Chaitanya, he created it. And his mission is in such that anybody in human form can take advantage. Mm-hmm. So it's artificial to try to put these external upadis on it to simply, you know, for whatever purpose that you have in mind. But the point is the Lord is saying everybody can take this up. Yeah, and it says all times, not, okay, well, that in the past, like this and that. Because something eternal is always viable. Yes. Right? Something under the control of time, that has a past, present, and future. But the eternal, that's always, valuable. He further instructed Tapan Mishra to give up all duplicity and always chant the 16-word, 32-syllable Maha Mantra with full attention. When Tapan Mishra asked permission to accompany the Lord ordered him to immediately go to Varanasi and indicated that they would again meet there and elaborately discuss the goal of life and the process to achieve it. When Tapan Mishra then related the topics of his dream, the Lord forbid him from disclosing these topics to anyone. And so whoever it was revealed that he's the Supreme Lord, the Lord asked that they don't discuss that. Thereafter, the Lord returned home from Bangladesh with his wealth and offered everything to his mother. Many students accompanied the Lord to Navadvip in order to study from him. Hearing about the disappearance of Lakshmi Devi, the Lord imitated ordinary people by exhibiting grief for a short time, and then instructed his mother about the temporary nature of this material existence. Nimai Pandit regularly taught his students in the Chandi Mandap, situated in the courtyard of Mukunda Sanjaya. If the Lord, who is the protector of Sanatan Dharma, found any student without tilak on his forehead, he would embarrass him in such a way that the student would never return to study without tilak. The Lord would say, the forehead of a brahmana that is not decorated with tilak is as good as the crematorium. This is the injunction of the scriptures. Whenever the Lord saw students without tilak, he told them that they have certainly not performed their morning rituals. Saying this, the Lord again sent them home, right? Because he'd just say, oh, you don't have tilak. That means, because tilak is part of the morning rituals. You don't have tilak. You didn't perform the morning rituals. So you should go home and perform the morning rituals. Like that. So it's just, you know what I'm saying? You're taking something to a particular extent, that by doing that, then, you know, you understand the essential point that's there. Yes. Does that make sense? And so then from that, then you catch the point being made. Yes. You know, it's not a matter, because it's obvious, you know, they took their bath, they did everything like that, they just didn't put tilak. Yes. But by saying, oh, by not having tilak, you must not have done anything, so you should go home and do that. You're a Brahmin, you should do these things. Then they can understand it's about the tilak. Right?
Yes.
Saying this, the Lord again sent them home. When the Lords returned after duly marking their bodies with tilak, then they were eligible to study with the Lord. Nimai Pandit joked with and teased everyone. He particularly made fun of the Srihatta residents' pronunciation of words. Srihatta is, do we know where?
Kumar,
is it on this side or on that side, the Bangladesh side? Okay. So they must have some very far out. accents, right?
Katwa.
It is Katwa. Oh, Katwa, that side. Okay, okay. The Lord, however, never laughed or joked with any women. As soon as he saw a woman on the road, he immediately came to the side or gave way. Conjugal activities as exhibited in the pastimes of Krishna Chandra in this world were not displayed during the appearance of Gaura. That is why Mahajanas and their followers, who know the science of Gaura Krishna, never address Gaura Sundara as Nadia Nagara, or the amorous hero of Nadia, after the style of Krishna, who is the personification of conjugal mellows. Right, so that's why this aspect of the Nadia Nagara, the Gauranga Nagaris, it's just completely bogus. You know, because Lord Chaitanya never manifests like that in his dealings, so for them to take it and put it into that context, it's just completely bogus from all angles. Right? Simply by just studying with the Lord for 1 year, students became expert in scriptural conclusions, right? Just for 1 year. That's a good teacher, right? Okay. Yeah.
You're pretty good too.
Yeah, but it's only in the 10th year we're starting to figure out what's going on.
He's just a free more.
Okay. Meanwhile, Sachimata, being anxious to marry her son for the second time, had Kashinath Pandit arrange the marriage of Nimai with the supremely devoted daughter of Raja Pandit Sanatan Mishra of Navadi. An intelligent aristocrat named Budhimanta Khan personally agreed to bear the entire expenses of the Lord's marriage. On the auspicious day, at an auspicious time, the festival of Adivasa, or the appropriate rituals to be performed the day before the marriage, were performed with great pomp. Riding on a palanquin, the Lord arrived at the house of Raja Pandit at the auspicious time of dusk. All the Vedic and social rituals were performed, and the marriage pastimes of Vishnupriya and Gaura, who are non-different from Lakshmi Narayana, were completed with great splendor. With a desire to please Lord Vishnu, Sanatan Mishra offered his dearmost daughter in the hands of the Lord and then also gave various gifts to his son-in-law. The next afternoon, sitting on a palanquin with Vishnupriya, the Lord returned home a continuous shower of flowers and the accompanying of song, dance, and music. When Lakshmi Narayan were seated inside the house, the entire universe began to glorify them. If a living entity hears the eternal marriage pastimes of Lakshmi Narayan, then he is cleansed of the desire for conjugal happiness that joins together male and female in this material world as enjoyer and object of enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Right, because that principle is very important, because we're trying to get beyond material enjoyment. As long as we're trying to enjoy materially,
yes,
then we're not going to be absorbed in Krishna. Right, and so then this conjugal aspect is where all means whatever enjoyment is there, you can put it all together in the conjugal environment. So that's why then giving up that desire for that enjoyment, that means all other things will go with it.
Yes.
Means in other words, instead of it's the taste, it's that we're taking prashad. Mm-hmm. You know, we're associated with devotees not just because it's something to do or pass the time or we're bored, but it's for, you know, association of Krishna. So whatever it is that is our form of enjoyment, when we start to see everything connected to the Lord, then we actually can move forward nicely.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, sir.
At that time, his good intelligence is awakened, and he understands that Lord Narayana alone is the enjoyer of the entire universe. Yeah, because it's interesting, the marriage ceremony, even the main mantras when Panigrahana, you know, when they're putting the hands together, then is about how Narayana is you know, the creation. It's all his. He creates the attraction. He creates all these different things. It's his potency that's coming from him, and then going to him. So everything, this whole attraction and everything, is all connected with him. That's you know, the central mantras of that part of the marriage. When the Lord mercifully embraced Buddhimanta Khan, the happiness in his heart knew no bounds. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Huh.
Buddhimanta Khan is the one who came to Lord, asked that, you know, he was thrown, some water was thrown on him and said he became a Muslim. Mm.
Oh.
Then he went to Brahman to ask how he can get rid of that.
Okay.
And the Brahman say, you eat, drink hot tea. Then you, the next life you can become.
Right.
He came to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, don't worry about it. You keep chanting the holy name.
Yeah. Could you imagine if the Brahmins had appreciated this and just told them, what do you care? Just go take a bath with your clothes on and chant Hare Krishna. Then, you know. Yeah, it means they wouldn't be writing in Calcutta now. So the problem actually came from the Brahmins. You know, the others are gonna, you know, make their attempt, you know, like that. You know, why not? But conclusion. The central point of all Vaishnava philosophy is to accept the inconceivable potency of Lord Vishnu. What sometimes appears contradictory from a material viewpoint is understandable in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he can perform contradictory activities by dint of his inconceivable potencies. All intelligence comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart as the Paramatma. One should not, therefore, be too proud of one's position. Even if one is a greatly learned scholar, if he commits offense at the lotus feet of the Lord, he will not be able to speak properly, in spite of his learning. Right? So it's not, the learning's not ours. It's we're performing the activity and worshiping the Lord in the form of knowledge, and then he's reciprocating by we gain knowledge. But it's the proper use of that and the proper attitude, then that can continue. Because the knowledge goes with humility. So if you're practicing the knowledge without the humility, then naturally there'll be problems.
Yes.
Right? Because Krishna's knowledge, it's his potency.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's why then you won't be able to speak, despite of your learning. You still won't be able to use it, because the ability to use something, that's coming from Krishna.
Yes.
Okay. In every respect, we are controlled. Our only duty, therefore, is to surrender always to the lotus feet of the Lord and not be falsely proud. That we can do. Our independence is the ability to surrender. And then when we take part, then the Lord has so many, you know, nice things going on and all that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because if we look at it, when things are going very well for us, even though it's being controlled by the modes of nature, we're not complaining.
Yes.
We're not saying, oh, why can't I be independent? Why does everything have to work? Why do I have to get such nice results? You know, no one's saying that. It's only when it's not going the way they want. Then they say, you know, what about my free will? What about this? Like that.
We think we can do whatever we want and get whatever we want.
Yes. But it doesn't seem to work. Even though it's such a popular philosophy.
Yeah.
But no one can give any example of it ever working. But still, we're quite convinced, you know, because, you know, the rational mind, you know, it's obvious that, you know, it didn't work for anyone else in the past and in the present, but it should work for me.
Good thing I'm here.
Yeah,
to change that.
Yeah, to change that. Yeah.
The Jiva Maya and Guna Maya takes care of each one of us. The Jiva Maya and Guna Maya takes care of each one of us.
Yes, yes.
Freedom.
Yes.
God there and there. No, yeah. Facilities.
Yes, yes. So that way, then.
Wait. So we're not the controller and the enjoyer?
No, it's amazing.
Come on.
Yeah, you've been, you know, how you say, you know, fanning that bucket all this time, thinking that you're the controller and the enjoyer of all this, and then you find out you're not.
Kiss. All right.
So now you have the choice of it. You just throw down the fan or even toss it in the fire and walk out, you know, or you just surrender to the Lord and take up service to the Lord. And
fanning the
I think I'll do that.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, you see, is that it worked for the Digvijayi Pandit. It worked for the others. So that we have example of.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Only 3 more minutes.
Hmm?
Only 3 more minutes.
Really? Oh, well, still.
Oh, I can stay.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, he'll be here in the morning. When we come in, it'll just be nice and full of smoke. Yeah. Chapter 17, The Pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in His Youth. Pratigya. It is not necessary to commit violence to stop the opposition from hindering a movement, for one can kill their demoniac behavior with reason and argument. Right? So that's the thing that you're trying to do, because even just this general thing in the Vaishnava, it's not about retaliation, it's about removing the obstacles to someone's devotion. Right, if someone's creating obstacles for the Sankirtan mission, that's because of their lack of proper understanding, their lack of, you know, the impurity in the heart. So if you can overcome that impurity, then they can do so much. Right? In other words, if someone can give trouble, that means if they're qualified to give benefit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because to make trouble, you have to know what is good.
Yes.
And then do the opposite.
Yes.
You know, I'm saying, so that takes organization, that takes management. So now if they would engage that in Krishna service, then they can do so much. So that's the whole point of the feature of the Sankirtan mission, is removing the demoniac mentality.
Yes.
Not worrying about the obstacle himself, or someone's done this and there. So if this is with the karmis, then let alone with the devotees. That's not, because it's the same thing. If someone's behaving badly, it's simply due to impurity. So remove the impurity, and then everything works nicely. Yes? Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 17th chapter, I have specifically described his youthful pastimes. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, 17, 327. Oh, so now we're coming up to those.
Yeah,
those
very
verses.
End of this chapter.
Oh, he just gives... Oh, okay, he summarizes the whole Adi Lila. Okay.
Yeah.
The 17th chapter is summarized by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It is Amrita Prabaha Bhashya. Describes Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime from his 16th year until the time he accepted the renounced order of life. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur has already vividly described these pastimes in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Therefore, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes them only briefly. Vivid descriptions of some portions of his pastimes are seen in this chapter. However, because Vrindavan Das Thakur has not elaborately described it. So, in other words, when he's just saying he did this, 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 and moving on, that means it's been described by Vrindavan Das Thakur. And when he gets into elaborate detail, that point that he's describing, that's what was not described by Vrindavan Das Thakur. Right? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.